I'm Fathery.
I'm Aaron.
Oh, is it? Who's,
yeah,
who's
whose
it
turn
next?
Is it going to? I'm Jesse. Hello. And this is the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, this is Tex Trek and Drawn to Trek. And in a moment, we'll have a visit from Mike McMahon.
Brandy, you didn't get a chance to introduce yourself. I'm sorry.
You know what? That's okay, because the guys always forget about me anyway. That's so true. I'm used to it.
That's
I'm
not
fine.
True.
I'm Brandy. It's like, I'm Brandy.
Why, hello.
Hello.
And normally here I have like a really bad joke where I somehow like try to say like, and this is Tex Trek, but this is also Drawn to Trek. But I don't have that. So I'm just going to click the play. And then depending on what you're listening to, you'll either hear a rockabilly song or a bunch of like samples from Star Trek cartoons. Here we go.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 267th installment of the Tex Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek old and new.
And episode 23 of Drawn to Trek, a Star Trek animation podcast from the Trek Geeks Network.
proud member of the Trek Geeks Network, and tonight we're talking about Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, The Whole Damn Thing.
The Whole Damn Thing.
That's a lot. This is 10
episodes
to talk about.
Your husband said
that
we're quadrants. We've got the alpha, beta, gamma, delta.
Oh, yeah. I guess I'm the Dominion. That's scary.
Am I the beta quadrant? Damn it.
No, you're the alpha. Yeah, you're the, like the basic
am
bitch
alpha,
quadrant. Yeah.
Am I alpha quadrant?
Who are we starting with?
Yeah, I thought alpha quadrant was that way.
No, alpha is like the bottom left, generally, and then
you
beta
have to take
is
the 405
right.
To get to the gamma quadrant.
Oh, at least I got Earth. I got Earth and Vulcan, right? So at least that's chill.
I like how with like these California roads, y'all are like the 405. Like it gives it more like because like you know we have like Interstate 35 runs down from like Dallas to Austin to San Antonio, but no one calls it the I-35 or
I
the
mean,
35.
Get stuck on the 405 for like 4 hours on your way to work, and you'll know why it's called the 405.
when you feel like Voyager spending 78 years or however long trying to get back to the Federation, right?
Exactly.
But I'm looking forward to talking about season four of Lower Decks with all of y'all in just a moment. Just a little bit of news I have to announce. First of all, just a big thank you to the Tex Trek Patreon supporters. We'll have our monthly watch party on November 18th. It's a Saturday afternoon. We're watching Charlie X because I think, off the top of my head, that's the only episode in all of Star Trek that overtly references Thanksgiving out of anything. So.
Mm. Well, I mean, yeah, that's true. I guess the other closest would be like that one Star Trek Discovery episode where they have like the family dinner that gets awkward.
And we did that. We did that as our watch party thing in November last year. So
There you go.
But. But yeah, that'll be fun. Also the strikes ended. So I'm sure, Alex Kurtzman is trying to book flights for, get Michelle Yeoh to Toronto, get all of the Strange New Worlds people up there, like get some cameras rolling, but they can make Star Trek again now. So
gotta figure out what's happening with the Gorn. Come on.
And now you're going to get a billion Star Trek Legacy tweets. I love that people are like, hey, is it, you know, can they get back to recording it? I'm like, there isn't an it. It does not exist.
Yeah. Don't get me started on Star Trek Legacy. I have thoughts.
Yeah.
No. After the writer's strike, though, they can, that is like a good point, though, but they can develop shows now. So there are, I'm sure someone is working on pitches somewhere. They're thinking about working on that. But because with Discovery leaving, you know, they're developing the, you know, Starfleet Academy and likely they're likely going to want to do something else, I think, just considering how Paramount Plus shows, you know, the only thing that's in the top 10 is either Star Trek or those Yellowstone spinoffs, the Taylor Sheridan guy. So
you could call it Yosemite.
Yeah, close, but not quite. I think Paramount Plus is going to keep making Star Trek spinoffs and Yellowstone spinoffs. So
honestly, yeah, the bigger question I think more is not whether or not Star Trek will continue going based on its own success, but more, will Paramount Plus survive?
That's a good point.
That is an actually good question. I think that'll be the biggest problem with more Star
Somebody
Trek.
Might buy Paramount, who knows?
Yeah, but that's the end goal. That was the whole point of, this is probably like more inside baseball than most people care about, but Sherry Redstone's whole like, no, we need to like remerge everything back together and hold on to CBS even though no one wants it, and like her whole like life's goal, like her whole dream was to make it, yeah, let's make like this big expensive package for someone like Netflix or Apple or Amazon to buy. So that will be the eventually someone will own Star Trek, whoever ends up buying Paramount. So
same thing with WB. It's a good time to be an artist in Hollywood. So
But some good news though, the return of Prodigy. It's gonna be a Prodigy Christmas, Prodigy homecoming. Yeah. Prodigy's coming home for Christmas, baby, to their new home at Netflix. So
you're already doing better advertising than Paramount ever did for the show. Mm-hmm.
It's good timing for them because I broke up with my partner Antonia back in February, but we just now separated the phone bill. I was kind of dragging my feet on that because she was paying for it. To be fair, like, she still has like a lot of shit over here she has to come pick up, so she's kind of like renting storage from me. But I found out when I was like doing all this reshuffling around with my phone bill, I was like, oh, T-Mobile will actually like pay for my Netflix subscription, which I currently is like the only streaming service I don't have. So I can now sign up for Netflix for Prodigy, and it's not going to cost me anything. So.
Oh, nice.
That's nice.
And I was hearing too, like, Prodigy going to Netflix might have been the best thing for it. Because again, we're talking about like how Paramount Plus is in terms of its views, where Netflix is also sort of rocky. It definitely has a bigger subscriber base. So it honestly will get it probably seen more, as well as maybe give it larger potential to get a season 3, given that it's kind of run by Nickelodeon, not Paramount necessarily.
Right.
So.
And that Nickelodeon is like a big part of Paramount Plus, and I mean that was definitely originally on there. But also, they didn't have to pay for season 2, so they're basically they're running a show that they didn't have to have any input on financially.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And I think it's going to be good exposure. A boon. I think it's just like having all the kids home, and if you want to like just put them in front of the TV, you could do that.
A lot of kids are going to get an iPad on Christmas Day, and their parent is going to be like, here, I'm going to like log into Netflix so I can hand this thing to you and go like, keep you busy while I go and like enjoy my Christmas Day. And like a lot of those kids are going to, they'll have the option. They'll see Prodigy. They'll see Dal and Murph and Rock Talk. I hope, and hopefully a lot of them click on it and enjoy the show.
Apparently, Tales of Arcadia, I think that's what it's called, did really, really well when it came out on Christmas. So.
Oh, nice. So Tales of Arcadia is a great, great series, also made by the Prodigy folks, so, right? Yeah.
Yep.
The Hagemans and Walkie. But yeah, there is a relationship there with Netflix, so.
I kind of guess that's where it was going to end up, just given that interaction between them all. And our banner spent the most time over that building. Well, I'd be curious to see how close to them saying yes it was to when we flew the banner.
That would be interesting. Yeah,
we don't want people standing outside of our building. Hurry, get the show. We already have protesters. We don't want to protest strikers.
So we talking some Lower Decks?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so we're gonna have our interview with Mike McMahon later at the end of the show, but Aaron and I sat down with him for 30 minutes and talked a lot about season 4, so I think y'all will really dig that. In the meantime, though, while we have Brandy and Jesse here, though, I would like to get some people's like overall opinions on the season, and if folks are joining us in the live audience, if you could please share your responses. But I think just starting off, why don't we just all go around and just kind of especially Jesse and Brandy, who weren't like yapping about this like every week on this show. I know that y'all are easy to find on other places. Jesse, why don't you go first and just kind of tell us like your overall impressions with season 4 and a bit of like how it compares to the other seasons of Lower Decks.
Honestly, I think I'm biased. Lower Decks is my favorite, currently running Star Trek show and one of my favorite Star Trek shows ever. But I think this was a fantastic season of the show. And honestly, I think the argument could easily be made that it was the best season of the show. It fixed a lot of like my larger critiques that I've had with Lower Decks, again, being a huge fan, which is, you know, sometimes the show kept resetting the status quo a lot of the time, where it's like, they're still on the Lower Decks, they're still like, they're still ensigns, you know, we're finding ways to like get them off the ship and then bring them back with Boimler and the Titan, things like that. But this season actually pushed them forward and actually felt like there was substantial growth in all of their characters that I thought was really wonderful, seeing them all move up to Lieutenant, the status quo changing on that level, but also the status quo changing with the addition of Talyn as well as some really wonderful payoffs to like series long character arcs like Mariner's stuff going on. And then the like overall mystery of the season was pretty surprising and yet felt incredibly satisfying in how it all tied together with the Nick Locarno of it all, both as like a nostalgia sort of thing, but also using Nick Locarno in a kind of interesting way that evolved his character from what we knew him before. So it didn't just feel like, hey, here's this guy doing the same thing that he did again, that you kind of got in things like Picard season 3, in my opinion. So like, I think on just almost every level, I think it was phenomenal. I mean, a few critiques here and there, like I think Boimler's arc was a little less like sort of specifically figured out towards the end. But I also have to point out too that this season gave me, I think, one of the most meaningful episodes of Star Trek that I've ever gotten. Tendi's episode, we'll talk about it when we get there, but like Tendi's episode specifically, I think just it means a lot to me. So yeah, just as a whole season, I think it was phenomenal.
Yeah, I'll ask you to talk more about that Tindy episode in just a moment. But
yeah, we were going to have you on, and something I think you're
I think
movie stuff happened.
Yeah, there's something to do with my movie had to come up. So,
Brandy, why don't you tell us your kind of just overall thoughts on season 4 as a whole?
Well, I don't have much different things to say than what Jesse has already said. I absolutely loved this season. I loved the progression of the characters. My only slight complaint, and it's really not a complaint, but give me more Boimler. Boimler's my dude, okay? I need more Boimler. It doesn't matter how much Boimler you put in there. I'm always going to need more Boimler. Because I am Boimler, and I feel represented.
Brandy, I asked Mike McMahon about that. I know that you're the number one Boimler stan, and yeah, I said like, hey, Mikey, it seems like there's a little less Boims in season 4. What's going on with that? So he comments on that in our interview that we'll be sharing in a moment.
It's probably Jack not being available or something.
It's, but yeah, I think like the
biggest having a career
is like yeah, right. Guilty on the boys and crap.
My Adventures with Superman too. And this is a big year for
him. Yeah,
which
great.
Is such a good show. Yeah. If you haven't watched that, shout out to everyone. If you have not watched My Adventures to Superman, what is wrong with you? My Adventures with Superman. Sorry, it's fantastic. I love it.
I met the showrunner too for that, and he is super nice too.
That's
his
awesome.
Voice is so close to Boimler that I like wanted to wait until this season was over and then watch it, so it didn't like start crossing them in my head.
But the biggest thing I could say is like the fact that Boimler and Rutherford too both kind of got a little like downplayed, especially towards the latter half of the season.
That's okay. If the ladies are front and center, I'm never going to complain about that.
Girls trip plus Boimler, you know?
Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Brandy, about just season 4 as a whole?
I really appreciate the evolution of Mariner's relationship with her mother and how they are so comfortable with each other now. And just how comfortable Captain Freeman is, period, overall, in how she runs the ship, how she interacts with people. She's come a long way since season 1, and I love seeing her like this. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, if I can add something to that, there's a lot of moments in season 4 where they kind of take a moment to highlight the similarities between Freeman and Mariner. And sometimes it's like kind of subtle, but there's a moment in the finale when Mariner is talking to Locarno and she says something like, come on, Nick, you're better than this. If you go back to season 3, there's an almost identical moment between Freeman and Buenamigo. And she says like, come on, man, you're better than this. Like, I think it's almost verbatim the same. So,
wow.
I'm really not.
She says he's not a killer.
Yeah.
He says, she says, you're not a murderer. And he says, oh, I really am.
Yeah, that was this. Yeah. And then that was this one. And then I think with the Buenamigo one, it was, what was his first name?
No, that was the Buenamigo one.
Oh, that was the Buenamigo one?
Yeah.
Oh, then the Locarno one, it's like, you're better than this. But it was pretty similar.
Yeah, it's similar. Yeah, for sure.
Aaron, what about you? What was kind of your general impressions on season 4?
I really think this season flowed together better than past seasons. And I have to agree. It's like, I think it might be the best season. You can't have it without the other 3 seasons. So there's a weird qualifier to it. But yeah. And what I really enjoyed was that the While they're cool Easter eggs to other Star Trek shows, they're now referencing their own show quite a bit. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite moments in the finale is when Boimler is taking over being captain. If you go back to season two, The Spy Humongous, it's almost identical to the improv captaining that he's doing on the black box stage. Mm-hmm. And I did some screenshots, and there's like this, it's like the same kind of stance and everything like that. And it was just, I thought that was really cool. But that version was kind of pompous and not, you know, realistic. This Boimler, even the way they drew his eyes, it seemed like that was really something that they, he seemed to have confidence without it being like fakely thrown on to him. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, normally I, for the overall story arc, you know, Jesse and I have had this conversation about the burn where it's like, there's no way you could have figured out who it was and what happened. And I think the difference, because I was trying to think, it's like, well, they're kind of the same thing. It isn't so inextricably linked with every single story. There isn't, you know, there, it's there occasionally, but it's not just totally weighing on your mind. And I felt it was a little bit more like, I want to let it ride and not try and figure out what it is, because I want to be surprised. And that was cool.
And the things that we knew in the story, too, with, like, Nick Locarno's stuff, the things that we knew, which was, like, there's a ship taking out other ships, is what would be present in the stories themselves. So, like, with the, them having to go to Orion because they're trying to, like, fix negotiations with the Orions because their ship was taken out.
Yeah.
Or the Betazoid spies, you know, coming on the ship as well. Like the thing with the burn, too, is, like, they mystery box it so much. So it's, like, this, like, ooh, big mystery that they, like, have to figure out. And so, like, the driving thrust of the narrative is figuring out this thing that we don't have a tenable grasp on. Whereas, like, the things that this mystery was setting up, with the things that we were dealing with our characters were the tenable aspects of it rather than this like nebulous thing.
And I was fine with like the how it would just like open with, you know, here's a random ship being destroyed. Like,
yeah.
I was fine with that just being kind of segregated off to its own little section of the episode and not having a ton of influence on the main plot, because I'm a patient audience member. I'm like, yeah, eventually, you know, they'll keep showing this to me and eventually it'll like tie in to the whatever big story they're trying to tell.
Within that, the little cold openings, that story did progress too. Just like, oh, you're finding out it's more of the lower deck people. And this, you know, so you kind of put
information.
Two and two together to figure out what sort of what going on. So, you know, it wasn't just the same, because we worried about that the first time it was repeated. We're like, oh no, is this going to be like every episode just opens up a thing and blows up and then you see the logo of the planet float by or something like that? So it was nice that it kind of got shaken up.
And it ties into the themes of the show, like it's kind of a reiteration of Weej Dooj with like getting to see different cultures, lower decks, and like tying this like we're not so different despite our cultural differences, like there's still similarities and dynamics. So that ties into like Star Trek themes as well. And then also all of those lower deckers get paid off in episode 9, where we end up on that planet where they're all there, so we get a little bit of payoff to all of those stories too. So it like emphasizes the thematics, ties into the mystery, gets a payoff in its own right for people who are paying attention. So it works on a lot of different levels.
I actually rewatched the entire series today.
Oh wow.
And not the entire series, the entire season, excuse me. Damn. I rewatched the entire season. And actually I did rewatch the entire series over the course of 2 days a few weeks ago. But anyway, the first episode, actually, of season 4, that first attack comes at the end of the episode. It is not the cold open.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, it's interesting. And, yeah, people are talking, we got Peanut, Hamper, and Agamus, Redemption Sharks, and Enfer Locarno, which I really like because, you know, with Peanut Hamper, you know, people disliked last season's episodes with Peanut Hamper. I liked it.
I didn't.
Lot,
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I liked it.
I loved it.
Some people who disliked it, it's like, oh, it's not showing
Brandy and
redemption.
I are like, on the same page.
But the point that episode, I think, was trying to make, whether you liked it or not, I think the point of it was that people need to earnestly want redemption to earn it.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode was the evolution of that idea, being like, they earnestly wanted redemption. And what I liked with the Nick Locarno storyline, and I think makes him work as such a good villain, is that he's this guy who pretends that he's like trying to do this for others, that he's trying to create this egalitarian, you know, anarchistic group that like there's no power structure.
But which would really be cool. That would be cool.
Like, yeah, yeah. And it's very clear that it's just like, no, he's a piece of crap trying to like, you know, capture his glory days, and like he's there, it's really there to like venerate his own glory, not actually try and create something new. And as soon as the characters, the people that he works with, see that he is that asshole, they're like, this isn't what we're about. Let's peace. And yeah. I think it was a very clear of like targeting of the criticism on like people like Nick Locarno, because there are people in, you know, very, you know, progressive or leftist or anarchistic movements who are just using it there for their own valor rather than like actually being about the movement.
I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, because kind of like one of my only complaints about the season is I don't think that was very clear. I think that should have been more clear. Like I feel like nowhere in that story arc did it kind of came off as like too much of a possible like defense of hierarchy to me. Like I felt like nowhere in there did they ever say like, but like this Locarno's idea of like trying to, you know, get rid of like these power structures, like that is like a potentially like good idea. Like I kind of wish that would have been emphasized, that like, oh, if it wasn't like Locarno's idea, like wasn't good. It's just like he didn't really believe it himself. He was just like, well, this is a way for me to be important.
Yeah. I think the way to do that, I mean, the way to fix that potentially is if they have Nova Fleet show up again in a later season.
Yeah.
And they're basically like good guys, like, or portrayed as like a good force generally. If they do that,
maybe they become the Fenris Rangers.
Yeah, essentially.
That'd be a great tie-in, honestly. They could tie that together. Now, that's something else that comes up when Aaron and I were talking to Mike McMahon, is that he said that he likes to pull stuff from shows that are already completed.
Mm-hmm.
Picard's already completed, so, you know, Fenris Rangers are like open game, right? Like,
honestly, that I love that concept. That would be a really, really cool way to sort of tie those things together. Yeah. If you make the Nova Fleet become Fenris Rangers, I think that's a great idea.
And a lot of us want like a Fenris explanation. It was just kind of like Picard's just kind of like, here's a thing, and now we'll never explain or tell you more or elaborate or anything, but it's there.
The closest we ever got to seeing some of the Fenris Rangers was in that audio drama set between seasons 1 and 2 with Raffi and mm-hmm. And 7.
Yeah, that actually has Jerry Ryan and Michelle Hurd. So people check that out.
I would highly recommend it, and you do get to see a little bit of the Fenris Rangers in that, like meet some of the Fenris Rangers there.
Like
the fact that he can pull from that show, it's like that's interesting, and it helps set up backstory too, because it's what, 3 years before the first episode of Picard, something like that. Yeah,
2399 is the year of season 1 of Picard.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, and this is 81, right?
Yeah, and this is 81.
This is quite a bit before.
Yeah, Lower Decks is at 1 year after Nemesis, so 2380, I presume. I have to look at the exact start dates, but I assume it's somewhere in there. So about 2 decades before.
Season 1 of Lower Decks is 2380, and as far as I can tell, seasons 2, 3, and 4 are all in 2381. They've all been in the same year.
Yeah.
That totally makes it possible to do Fenris Rangers then. Like, there's a lot of time to have that thing morph into something else.
Yeah, you have 18 years there.
Yeah, I'm glad it wasn't like 2 years or 3 years. Like, I was thinking about like, oh no, are they going to have to deal with like the Mars explosion and all that? And, no.
And if they don't do it in Lower Decks, I'm sure a novelist will do it.
But speaking of Prodigy, if we switch back to Prodigy, everyone does need to stream Prodigy on December 25th when it hits Netflix, because if it does well and gets a season 3, Aaron Welke has said that he wants to do stuff that ties into what Picard had going on in the 2380s, like the stuff with Mars and Romulans and all of that. So it'd be fun to see that from like the Prodigy kids' perspective.
Yeah, that'd be very interesting, and actually make the synth storyline make sense.
Yeah, no, they could do all kinds of cool
stuff. Good luck with that.
I mean, it's doable, but it's better than yada yada yada. We repealed the synth ban over the course of a week right after the Elder Tor tentacle monsters came out, and we're like, yeah, they're whatever. Anyways, I'm not bitter about Picard. It's fine.
That's okay. We don't have to talk about Picard anymore tonight. We'll talk about it again. let's talk about Lower Decks season 4. Just like favorite episodes, characters, or moments. Like, did anyone have like Jesse? What was your? You already said your favorite episode. So why don't we just start there? You said episode 4. The green. The what is it? Something green.
Yeah, something borrowed. Something green.
Yeah.
Something borrowed. Something green. I adore that episode. I mean, I've ranted elsewhere, numerous places about it. So I won't go into elaborate detail. But
four hours later.
Episode, yeah. Right. but that episode meant seriously the world to me. I have spoken a lot about how Tendi is perhaps one of my favorite characters in all of Star Trek, behind maybe only Jadzia. It's because she is this character who is so full of life and so positive and so kind and so caring, and always brings it around to just being so just almost violently just caring and kind to her friends and being about them. I just identify with that and also try to live up to that as a character trait. And also on top of that, she's a character, and me being a trans person, like, I just identified a lot with her story about being from, there's just numerous things you can say, like she has like a dead name, she has like pheromones, she doesn't have pheromones that other like Orions have, things like that. So I always like kind of like secretly read a trans narrative into her that I was just putting upon her. But what that episode did is really kind of make those things that I had kind of read into Tendi very textual. I mean, Tendi is quite literally assigned assassin at birth in that episode. Like, she makes clear that she was someone who was told to be this thing from birth and chose not to, that and left and found her own queer found family in Starfleet and chose to pursue being her best self and what she wanted to do beyond how her society tried to limit her and tried to define her for herself. And while that's not textually trans in like a gendered sense that we think of transness today, it is a very trans experience. And so it just really resonated with me on so many levels and just made this character who I love with all of my heart resonate more with me and who I am, and I think added a lot of really interesting depth to her. And just speaking of moments to kind of jump off of that in a way I haven't had a chance to really talk about yet is the final moment of the season where Tendi does have that moment where she like says, "You got this." It was such a powerful, beautiful moment, because the way I read that is Tendi saying, you know, she's like, she knows who she is now, and she's not going to let Orion, the society, try to define her again. Like, she knows who she is. She's going to be her science-loving, kind, weird dork of a self, and isn't going to let Orion just take that from her in a way that, you know, perhaps Tendi of, you know, four seasons ago would not have been so confident in who she is, would not have been just confident in her identity. And so we've seen that arc for her, and I think at that moment just really pays off, like, a confidence that Tendi never really had, an identity she never really had, that I found really amazing and just was, I think, just such a cool and powerful badass moment to end the season on that I honestly loved. So Tendi's arc overall, that moment for Tendi specifically, and then that episode, Something Borrowed, Something Green, I think were all like really wonderful just things that I loved about the season.
You know, something that I haven't heard many people talk about, but they kind of intentionally connect back to the first episode of the show in season four with Tendi's arrival on the Cerritos, that we kind of like Lower Decks has been the story of just like Tendi's time on the Cerritos thus far. And they remind us back to her first day in the season in Caves when we see the flashback to that, you know, to them hanging out in the bar that first day and her in the turbo lift. And we learned there that like she was nervous. Everyone was going to have all these prejudices against her for being Orion. They were going to prejudge her. But she comes on, she finds like this welcoming, you know, group of friends that embrace her, and she's all like relieved in the turbo lift, like, oh, I was, you know, nervous and stuff. And then at the season finale, when they have her like standing and looking at like that back window when the ship goes into warp, she did that on the Cerritos when she first got on the Cerritos in the first episode. She was like staring out like that back window when the ship went to warp. So that's like a thing like she does when she first gets to a new ship, I guess. But like, yeah, she was scared. You know, when she arrived at the Cerritos, she was like, you know, the scared little girl right out of the academy, like, oh no, everyone's going to be mean to me because I'm Orion. And now that she's grown over these four seasons, you know, she's on the Orion ship and she's like, yeah, this ain't shit. Like, I got this, you know? So yeah, I love exactly. that. I love that growth. Yeah, so cool. Brandy, what about you? Did you have a favorite episode of the season, or a moment or character, or like what was like a big highlight of season four for you?
So many things. It's anyone who knows me should know that I have a really hard time picking favorites, and so when I say something is my favorite, it is a big effing deal. So I think my favorite thing, gosh, my favorite episode, I'm gonna say, if I have to pick, is going to be the finale, although it's tied very closely with I Have No Bones But I Must Flee. because that episode, besides giving us a moopsie, which thank God we have moopsie now, because I just, moopsie! I love that little thing so much. I love how when it's walking, it's like, it's just... And yeah, it's a cuddly little murderer, but I can't help it. I love it. I love it. But not only did that episode give us Moopsie, but it gave us this new understanding between Ransom and Mariner. Mm. And it goes back again to a person hearing something out of context and assuming that they know what's going on. Stop assuming. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Ask for context. Get context. Just
context is for kings. Yeah, yeah.
It is for kings. It is for kings.
Well, at least they did that this season. Where there, what was it, season two or something? Where it was like every other episode was somebody just mishearing something. You're just like, oh.
Yeah. You don't ever, just never assume you make an ass out of you and me. But I loved that.
The joke only makes sense if you understand the English language. Doesn't translate well.
Yeah. So I really loved that episode. So that's probably what would rank as my second favorite episode. Because I just appreciated Mariner finally understanding what was going on and that he wasn't going to let her self-sabotage anymore. And also, she got to break all of his teeth out of his mouth and decoy Moonsie back into his
When I rewatched that one last night, I was like, oh my god, the teeth getting knocked. Like, just standing there, like, letting someone just punch all your teeth out. Just like, that's hardcore.
It's terrifying.
I love the nuance that brings to Mariner's storyline. Because I saw some people criticize, like, Mariner's arc this season. Where people were saying, like, oh, it feels like this is the Mariner of season one, where she's, you know, being rebellious. And I'm like, no, this is coming from, A, like, her getting promoted and that being a trigger for her. Very clearly a trigger for her, because we see that in season one she's briefly promoted there as well, and she does everything she can to push that down and like tries to ruin her leadership chances, because it is an emotional trigger for her for reasons that we find out in episode 9. And so like it is a backtrack for her character arc, but it's one that's rooted in her trauma, and you know, like, growth is not a straight line. And I like that the show showcases that like Mariner has shown a lot of growth because she has been able to not push people away, but actually like form a friend group. But when her triggers are still come up, she's still going to react that emotionally the same way. And what's different now is she does have people like Ransom and her friend group who are there to care about her and support her and see her for herself. But the trigger's still going to happen. And so I just thought that was, again, just a really great nuance of her character development that this season showcased, that I think I saw some people misunderstanding as like a lack of nuance of her character. I'm like, no, it's a deep nuance in her character.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to, you know, now that we've had like this big event with Mariner, you know, now that she went through like that growth in the cave with Ma'a and accepted promotion, she's like, she is kind of like, I will finally accept some character development that I've been resisting for 4 seasons. I'm looking forward to the Mariner we get in season 5, or, you know, whatever, however many more seasons of the show will happen. I'm looking forward to whatever's going to be different now after this, because I think that things will be different for her.
Yeah. Okay, I wasn't done.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Apologies, Brandon.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
That's why I didn't
because
speak.
Because I hadn't gotten to my favorite edition of this season, and y'all know what it's going to be if you know me. It's T'Lyn. You know how I love me a Vulcan, and you know how I love me a Vulcan that is different from the rest of the Vulcans, and that is T'Lyn to a T. Ha! See what I did there? Terrible. It was terrible. I'm so sorry. And she reminds me so much of Spock in many ways, and I'm like one of the biggest Spock fans ever since. I know it's kind of, I kind of keep it under wraps, you know. I try not to be so blatant about it, but
yeah, if people are listening to this, Brandy is right now like on screen surrounded by many representations of the character Mr. Spock.
It goes all oh my the way to the ceiling. Oh, and my. It goes
all right stop Spock teasing us now. We get it. We get it. You're really into Spock.
There's more in the living room that you can't see, but anyway,
action figures.
Those are on the other side of the room. The Spock corner is over there. So,
this is the Spock corner.
No, this is the Spock art corner.
This is the spillover.
Is the Spock action figures?
The main Spock corner.
Yeah, and then I've got a Spocktober pillow and everything. Anyway, long story short, T'Lyn is her own thing. Yes, she's a Vulcan, and yes, she's different than the other Vulcans, and so grateful that she is. And she is figuring out her own way throughout this season, and having these friendships kind of forced upon her is probably what she thought of at first, but these people actually became her friends. And now she knows what it's like to be someone who is valued rather than someone who is constantly chastised.
And or tolerated at best.
Tolerated at best, yes. And I can't wait to see what she does in future seasons because I think she's just brilliant. And frankly, she should be in the main cast, y'all.
Aaron, I love you making that distinction of not just tolerated at best, but that ties into something that Gene Roddenberry often talked about. Kind of the unique thing about Gene's Star Trek message of infinite diversity and infinite combinations. So I think he always kind of emphasized that it's not enough just to accept differences, but we must celebrate those differences. And I think that's kind of like that extra little, that's the Roddenberry Star Trek message that's kind of, kind of unique to us. And that is definitely a distinction there. And I agree with you, Brandy. I think that T'Lyn should be in the main cast. I was so heartbroken when I had to go. I think there's a 3-episode gap. There's like a 3-week gap of no T'Lyn.
No, that was kind of.
Yeah, that's hard. And having that extra voice on there, it is kind of like when you're binging DS9, you get to season 4 and all of a sudden Worf shows up and you get all these characters are bouncing off of Worf and it kind of, it freshens up the show. And Voyager had that with 7 and 9 and it was, it's cool that Lower Decks is getting that with T'Lyn. I'm hoping for, I want even to more
allow
T'Lyn
people to pair
year.
Off more too, in different combinations than we had seen before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
Aaron, I want to ask you if you had any big favorites in the season, but while we're talking about T'Lyn before we get to that, I don't know, does anyone else have big T'Lyn thoughts? She was a pretty big part of season 4. I can talk about her a little bit more, but
I could talk about her all day, but then we'll be here all day, and so you guys go.
But the thing that surprised me was kind of how that her and Mariner bonded so well, and I pointed this out when we got to it, but yeah. I mean, there's sometimes they would have sparks a little bit when she neck pinched the Cardassian and Mariner gives the side eye and she's like, I could have handled that Cardassian, just I'm sure you would have tried or whatever, but yeah. For the most part they are kind of on the same page and they're kind of you're the sassy rule breaker of what it is to be that for a human, I'm that for a Vulcan. And I like that they didn't just butt heads constantly, that because that would have been kind of the obvious easy way to write a conflict between those two characters. And I think what they did with they actually both kind of resonate with their little connective tissue, that's the more interesting thing to go and probably more true to the spirit of the show. So I was happy to see that.
You just made me realize a criticism I do have this season, a criticism of Omission, because I really like T'Lyn and Mariner's chemistry, mm-hmm. so much so that I kind of ship it a little bit. I could easily see that being a ship. And it made me think of my criticism, which is no Jennifer whatsoever this season.
Yeah, there was no wrap up to that at all.
Yeah,
was...
and especially considering that one of the major criticisms of season 3, especially from many queer folks, was the sort of overly quick and emotionally resolved Jennifer Mariner relationship that sort of they break up in episode 9 and then episode 10 just Mariner and Jennifer just seem over, they don't even have a moment together, a visual glance moment. That Mike McMahon himself, I had interviewed him last year and he literally said that was a mistake on his part to not have them see each other and have a moment of recognition that there was a broken relationship between the two. And even in the final scene where Mariner walks in and Jennifer's sitting there on season 3. And so getting to season 4, there was a hope of there being some level of emotional resolution there between the two of them, of them acknowledging that, they were in a relationship, they broke up, but we don't even get to see Jennifer at all. Which is kind of a little bit frustrating. Like I said, it's not the end of the world, but it brings with it a little bit of echoes of Seven and Raffi and the mishandling of their relationship over in Picard through all 3 seasons of that show. So it's an unfortunate unforced error, I think, by the series. So hopefully we'll see Jennifer come back in season 5. There's still they can still pull it around. But yeah, that is a sort of bit criticism that I do have of the season. So. And again, here for Mariner and T'Lyn's shipping, though. I think that relationship would be very interesting.
Hell, if anything, telling that story would give you opportunity to do the whole Mariner-Jennifer breakup explanation thing. But Aaron, what do you got?
Well, I was going to say, I agree that it would have been nice to actually see Jennifer in this season, or at least some sort of wrap-up. But I actually liked that walk through the bar and not look at her, because it was sort of it was almost I know who my real friends are. You sold me out, basically. So, and she's like, I'm not even going to take the time to look at you. But not that she would never, but it just, for that moment, it felt like she was going to the important people in her life.
I get that. I think if I have to rewatch it, does Jennifer have a reaction to Mariner, though?
I think she kind of okay. looks at her. Yeah.
Okay. Then that's at least
she looks
at her
and she looks upset.
Okay.
She,
yeah. That looks, at least makes she it work kinda, a
little it's almost like a wince, mm-hmm. I guess, is the best way to describe it. And Jennifer has been in season four. She just doesn't get any lines. Mm-hmm. She almost gets turned into another Tuvix yeah. person.
Oh, she's in the right. Betazoid and, episode, too.
She's in the Betazoid yeah. episode, too. So, yeah, she's there, just in the background. She doesn't get any lines. And I wonder if that's because Lauren Lapkus wasn't available. I don't know.
Hmm.
You know.
Well, if that was the case, they could have said something without using her character then. I mean, that would have been possible to, like, have a conversation.
Yeah, you could mention her.
Yeah.
And I will say there was queerness in this season. I mean, like, the Betazoids do sort of, like, reference, like, being attracted to women at certain points. You could even, like Joel is saying in the chat, I mean, like, this is more for the fanfiction realm, but there is an element of queerness in the idea that being trinars instead of binars. Like, that's, like, a queer, like, if binar society is all about, like, two people together, there being a, you know, three-person, you know, group is a queer version in the bi.
That's a neat idea.
World.
Yeah. What would queerdom be in a binary society?
More than two.
Or even one. Like even one would probably be seen as a queerness.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, anything but two would be seen as queer because it's all in the name of binar. Mm-hmm. It's like stop being so binary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why I like the trinar group.
Mm-hmm. With the Betazoids, it was also, she said, you know, it's like, how's the quadrant's most eligible captain? She's like, I'm still married. But it's like the fact that she was the one like hitting on her. So I was like, that was great. Yeah.
I did like that. I mean, I think all Star Trek should go under the assumption that everyone is some form of pansexual until proven otherwise.
Well, Ransom did say it was the horniest and the least romantically committed in ship in the fleet. So
that was a weird thing to say.
It is a weird thing to say, but it's like the only Star Trek show where like it's true. Like no one on that ship other than Freeman seems to be in like a marriage. So
and he's not there.
Yeah, I mean, Ransom is churosexual quite clearly. So
that was a thing.
The churro doll.
There is no churro doll in season four, unfortunately. But Aaron, was there any like episodes or moments or characters or anything that really stood out as a favorite for you?
There were a lot of little moments that were my favorite that just still make me just crack up. Like in Tuvix, the safety protocol set to random. It's just like, random? No, computer, set them to safety. Which, like, I don't know why that just made me crack up. Just the
it
idea
sounds like
that,
something someone would say they're like on the spot. They'd be like, no, that's not right. Safety is right. You know, like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, what would random be? Like, why would you ever use that? I guess it's like Russian roulette with the holodeck. Mm-hmm. And then in the Cradle of Vexilon, when Boimler is doing his confidence boosting ritual, he's like, no, I was just checking the hardware. It's like Boimler did it in, and there's like this horrible like feedback, and it's like, just like, I don't know, because it was a technical thing. Like they don't really make fun of the technology a lot, so I thought that was great. But
yeah,
you know, obviously I loved the Vendorians, seeing that from the animated series, and like literally like tripling the lore about the race. But I think one thing we're really forgetting that kind of changes everything in Star Trek is in the inner fight, Rutherford finds out the pants have pockets.
I know! That changes everything!
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It also makes me feel better about in my improv, I had pockets and I would occasionally put my hands in there and like take them out because like, oh, they're not supposed to have pockets, but no they are! So,
making canon better for all cosplayers.
Pockets are canon now. But I typically cosplay Starfleet uniforms and pants with pockets because I have like a wallet and keys and stuff to carry.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're a Starfleet officer, you've got to have stuff to carry. You need pockets.
What if you pick up something from there? Like, where does it go?
Yeah, exactly. Need pockets.
Really quickly, piggybacking off the Talin thing, what I loved her eye acting, basically just the side glances and just she said so much with just that. And it's funny because it's like it's a white circle with a dot. You know, it's just like it's not really that expressive. But if you noticed when Logiki like was born, whatever, he has the same eye movements as her. It's like they just replicated that into the Super Logic badgie, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. I wonder if they just have like a file, like the animators have a file and it's just like Vulcan
just eyes
eye expressions or whatever it would be like labeled as like. But they just pull whatever they need from that when they have Vulcans. And like, oh, logically, we'll just go to like the Vulcan resources.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I think probably one of my favorite T'Lyn moments with her eyes was when Boimler gets killed. And she, with all the rest of them, she's just like.
Mm-hmm.
It was just fantastic. She doesn't say anything. She doesn't move. She
is so great in that episode because, like, before the Betazoid, she doesn't care about the Cerritos. Like, she doesn't, like, if Boimler dies in front of her and doesn't get revived, like, you know, she's not happy about it. She's a Vulcan. She's not going to be happy, but she's not sad about it either. She's very, she's just very, like, just does not give a shit at all about anything
going
on. Well,
it's also like, oh, well, I guess this proves that the statistics are right. But no, I really love her. I think her character is great. Oh, and the one last thing of her eye acting in the finale when Boimler stands up like as they're pushing the ship through whatever, and she looks at him like, "Why are you standing up?" And then he just goes, "It's like three frames, but it's just he could just like that was a mistake." So I thought that was great.
He was in the moment. He was just in the moment.
What was nice that he was. Super together and as a captain said, but we got that one fraction of a moment. It was like, nope, it's still Boimler.
Boimler is going to Boimler, you know, so he's still going to be Boims at the end of the day.
I also kind of identify with Boimler. That was me in high school a lot.
That's me
and
now.
Still now, but yeah. It's just a little, hide it a little bit better. Unless I get super stressed and then watch out.
You know what? My big Boimler moment this year when I like related to him, it actually wasn't in Lower Decks, but it was in Strange New Worlds when he's talking to Chapel in the turbo lift, when he's just like, but Spock was never happy there. I've read every book about him. He never like fell in love and lived happily ever. And like, and then he like, he realized like, oh no, what am I doing? Like, I always feel like, oh, I just said the exact most incredibly wrong thing I could possibly say in the moment. But I realized that about like 20 seconds after I've said it. So that was my Boimler moment from this year.
Yeah, I guess we should have included that episode because that feels like it's part of it.
Although, Stardate-wise, we figured out that takes place in season 3, right before they go to Deep Space Nine. And that's why they were on a planet near like Bajoran and Cardassian space when they were trying to decipher that language, because they were on their way to the Deep Space Nine episode.
For all the people who say that the writers don't pay attention, it's like that's a detail that like who was gonna find that out besides us, you know, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, the Lower Decks really cares about Stardates. Probably the only show that does, but they do care.
They do.
The Stardates are important to Mike McMahon because when he wrote his like season 8 book for TNG, or I guess he started that on Twitter, but the idea behind that was that it would all take place in there is like a year in between All Good Things and Star Trek Generations that a fictional season of TNG could have existed in. So he's always been like a pretty eagle-eyed when it comes to the star dates. Did anyone have any other final thoughts on Lower Decks season 4 before we bring out the Mike McMahon interview?
Yeah, I sure do. I think that it's really difficult to keep setting the bar higher every season, and yet they continue to do it. And I don't know if it's ever going to top off. I feel like Mike McMahon is the kind of person that can just keep raising that bar, and I'm here for it. I just appreciate everything that this show has brought us, and I can't wait to see what they bring us next.
Yeah, well, Mike does talk a little bit about some season 5 stuff in this interview. Just, I guess, like my own final thoughts on season 4 is I think season 3 and 4 both. I prefer those over seasons 1 and 2 of the show, and I think it just kind of needed time to establish itself, and once it had its own identity and started leaning onto its own history as much as the history of the other shows, I think is when it really like hit its potential. And you know, that being said, like the show, it has, now that we are seeing like the characters grow, it is kind of about like people, kind of like the specific time in life, you know, when you're, I guess, it's not about like youth or adolescence, but it's like that early like adulthood, like kind of like your first like big job after college. I don't know, it'd probably be like kind of a conventional way to frame it for a lot of people, but that's, I feel like in order for the show to like allow those characters to grow, what we can't do is just like have like, you know, 10 seasons of stagnation, and I don't know what the future of these characters are, but what I would like to see is, like, I would like to see, like, a satisfying ending to the Lower Decks story, and I don't know if that will be, if season 5 will be the end, or if it'll be 6 or 7, I don't think it would go more, but But I would like to see, like, the show, like, avoid, like, the Smallville thing. Like, oh, we took, like, a show about, like, Clark Kent in high school and milked 10 seasons out of it and kind of, you know, I don't want to see that. But I don't want to say, like, no more. So I don't know what I really want for, like, the future of it. If I want, like, Lower Decks to end, but then, like, we check in on, like, these characters and, you know, Alex Kurtzman says he wants to do, like, these spinoff movies, these made for streaming movies. So maybe that would be like a good vehicle for it or whatever. But yeah, I think that you know, the characters are growing up. I think they should kind of have like trajectories of, you know, wherever their end game is going to be for like the story. Like I just hope that like they're able to get there. And we're in like the back half of the show's lifespan, I feel like, now after season four. So I think it's time for, you know, the people like, you know, making the show to kind of start thinking about like, What would be satisfying for how these things are ending? So, but all that being said, let's bring on Star Trek Lower Decks creator and showrunner Mike McMahon. Mike, how the hell are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm having a good week because we aired the Lower Decks season four finale, which is always feels like a triumph when we get a whole season out there, you know. And getting to see everybody's responses has been amazing. So it's been a good couple days.
Yeah, I'm sure that's like real rewarding. Like how long does season four like sit with you from like, you know, you first start working on it to like now when it's finally like all said and done, it's all laid to rest?
It's like a little over a year. It's like, you know, we start writing in like March and then it airs, you know, late summer the year after. So it's a lot of work. But, you know, what's nice is that while one show is being worked on, we're working on the next season. So I'm already thick in on season five. So you're working on season five and then you're seeing the episodes drop as you've been working on them. You know, the last things we do is sound editing and, you know, all the final animation fixes. So it's almost like, oh, this thing that you're writing on the page right now, look, you're seeing it. You're seeing last year's that on screen and it's sort of motivating.
Let me ask you some questions about season four, now that it is here and we can all see it and celebrate it. But I guess the big thing this season was the promotions, the big status quo shift, you know, the focus on ensigns, on the lowest rank for officers in Starfleet was always a big part of the show's identity. Was that scary to shake it up so much by like introducing promotions?
It was scary, but it was scary because you're really only ever thinking about character and what stories can I tell? And you don't want to limit either. And originally I was going to promote everybody end of season four, maybe end of season five. And we started talking about the kind of stories I wanted to tell. And it made me realize, you know, another important part about making any show is that you want to keep people surprised and engaged. And yeah. I didn't want the stories to feel similar to what we'd already done and our characters had come so far. So, you know, I was a little nervous at the very beginning of writing about promoting them at the end of the first episode, especially because it's a packed episode. And, you know, third acts of Lower Decks, like, there's never enough time. You know, you want more time for promotions. You want more time for characters to apologize for what they did in the episode. But, like, we've only got, like, under 23 minutes most of the time. So it's like, like, we spent too much time in space having fun. Now we got to, the apologies go fast, you know, but the promotions, you know, I wasn't afraid of the promotions once we did it because it was such fertile storytelling opportunities after that, you know, that it went from being like stories in your 20s when you're like the lowest person on the food chain at work to being stories where you and all your friends are slowly advancing in your careers. And you think that's going to be rewarding, but it brings a host of new problems, you know? And once those stories were getting clear to me, I was like very happy that we did it because these characters deserve it. They've been through a lot, you know?
Sure. Yeah. That's a complaint, you know, other Star Trek shows get when characters Harry Kim, the most famous one, but.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's also like Starfleet's system of promotions and ranks and, it's such a head scratcher anyway that like, I would rather you be all enjoying. I'm sure every Star Trek showrunner has always said this. We'd rather you be enjoying the show than trying to figure out, you know, the rank system. Like leave that for kind of like the same way that like you love blueprints. Like we love to talk about this stuff and figure it out. But like when you're watching the show, you just want to enjoy the show, you know?
Yeah. Well, I also love that we're getting more about the upper decks as well. Good to see, like, seeing Carol Freeman become like a really good captain. That's what was so nice about this season. Actually, we had mentioned beginning of this year, I said I would love to see more about Jack, because Jack is sort of like a little bit of a more one-dimensional character. But like, and as soon as I said that, it's like that's what I love about Lower Decks is what I think about, and then suddenly it's like it happens, as opposed to other shows that it might go a different direction. So it's
yeah,
like
we try to same defy we try to defy expectations, right? And like, you want to love Jack because you love Jerry. You know, Jerry's performance is so funny. And over time, like, yeah, originally Jack was written as kind of this like kind of, you know, unlikable sort of foil. But then as you're writing him as also being a Starfleet officer, even in first season, it starts creeping in that he like his motivations are good, you know? And in a way, a lot of the bridge officers, they're all great at their job. There's just things that were keeping them from expressing that. Like Captain Freeman's always been a good captain. She's just been too focused on appearances, you know, and as she got more confident, she's able to be the captain that was always there. Like, it's important to me that like the goodness of all of these characters, they're all Starfleet. You know what I mean? And it's just, you get in your own way sometimes. You have to be, I keep using the phrase unburdened. A lot of these characters get unburdened by the stuff they used to think was important. And it reveals that it allows them to be the best, you know?
That is really cool. Yeah. I do have a question about the senior staff is good at their job. I think we've seen a lot of that, especially like this season, except for one character in particular. So Magumo, like he's a lot of fun. There's some funny stuff with him in the finale where I kind of thought he was going to have like a finally like Maglimo's big victory, but I've never seen him like be like good at therapy. Is that something that's going to happen in the show?
I think Maglimo weirdly is kind of good at therapy. Like we've seen when he was talking to Tendi about, you know, speaking truth for science, like we've seen a couple moments of him shine. The thing is like, it's hard to write a comedic story called a guy goes to a good therapist and it works.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like sometimes that happens, but that's why you just don't see Maglimo solving these problems all the time. It's more like, and also therapists aren't, you know, they don't cauterize your problems. You know what I mean? Like therapists, it's
a process
you go to and it's, you have to keep going to, it's like exercise. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like, I kind of think like, you could say that Maglimo is not, you know, rolling in there to solve a bunch of problems, but at the same time, you know, Boimler clearly goes to Maglimo all the time. Like I think all these characters have a weekly stop in with Maglimo that kind of we're not seeing, but that mental health and respect for mental health care is like a baseline that everybody in Starfleet is doing. And it's only when there's things that like, you know, you have to be an active participant and a willing participant for that kind of stuff to work. So like Mariner's only going to tell some stuff to a Klingon in a cave. You know what I mean? Like she's not unloading that stuff to Maglimo. She's not telling that stuff to Boimler. So yeah, I think, look, Miglimo's funny, but I think deep down, like the stuff we're not seeing with Maglimo is he's actually not terrible.
Well, that is, I guess, implied with Boimler being like, oh no, I'm gonna have to start over with the new therapist.
Yeah. Miglimo's gross. He eats a lot of bugs. I just think the way Paul F. plays Maglimo makes me like him. You know what I mean? Like it just, you don't want to punch down on me. I'd be like, that's why I'm like, no, leave Maglimo alone. I love everybody on the Cerritos, you know?
That casting was crazy, by the way. We all witnessed that in real time.
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. It's classic. Classic, you know, Star Trek Lower Decks was born on Twitter as TNG Season 8, and Maglimo was cast on Twitter. And we found Tawny through her podcast, you know? Like, it's amazing the avenues that we've found some people.
Actually, that relates to the question that our friend Rachel had. And she was like, how do you find an actress who isn't working anymore? Like when you reached out to the actress who played Cito, because
Shannon?
Off for a while. Yeah.
Shannon. So
Shannon was hard. So, you know, sometimes people still have reps and like they just haven't worked for a long time, but they've stayed in touch. Other times they're at the convention circuit, you know?
Right.
And so I can just call John Van Sitters and be like, hey, would you mind putting me in touch? Or what's their preferred method? I've actually gone through Frakes a couple times because Jonathan Frakes loves Lower Decks and is both a huge fan and just like loves the show and loves being a part of it. So like if I have a really tough time, I'll reach out to Jonathan and he'll put me in touch with somebody, you know, like that's happened, I think, a couple times now. And then for Shannon was tough because I don't think she switched careers and has been doing, she's been working in medical. She's been working with, palliative. Is that how you pronounce it? She works with people who are dying of cancer.
Oh yeah. Palliative care. Like, yeah.
She works with, I think in like underprivileged communities and she's up in, I think like, Central California and just hadn't been a part of this world since 1995. But I was like, we're finding her. You know what I mean? Like we're finding her and between our CBS casting, our show's casting, and really Brad Winters kind of led the charge on that. Oh, like okay. We tracked her down and God, I'm so happy we did because she's such a small part of this episode, but she's so important to the finale.
Yeah.
And working with her, we're now friends with her and she's like, she feels like this is magic. You know what I mean? And once the strike is over, we're going to make sure that we get her with people to talk about the experience of like going from 1995 to 2022 and being nice. Like, you know, suddenly coming back. But like, what a joy to work with her. We're still like, we still chat with her. Brad texts with her all the time. She watches Lower Decks on her elliptical. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so cute. And her performance was great. And she's such a lovely person that we were like, Brad and I were both like, you need to come out and promote the show with us, but you also need to talk about all the work you do and like spread the word about that because
yeah,
like,
sure. Yeah.
That's like Star Trek stuff. Like
exactly. Yeah. It's so Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah. Our audiences would want to like hear about that and people would probably like be curious about getting involved. So for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We need to get her out in the spotlight. That is great, so cool. Great.
I'm like, let's take you to a convention. Let's go. Yeah. People would flip. Encinito, get out of here.
Yeah. Creation. You'll need to have her at Vegas. Next year, yeah, make it happen.
100%.
I have a friend who cosplays as Isito, so she would be like totally thrilled to like be able to take a picture with her.
I did a whole episode. I did a whole season arc about her.
Well, it's funny. Also, real quick, related to that, we were noticing that Rachel and I were watching the finale, and it's just like, wait, because we always joke that we forget the other character in the Nova Squad, Jean Hadar.
You told me her name an hour ago, Aaron, and I already.
Yes,
Joshua Albert, I can remember forever. We never even saw the dude in First Duty. I have never forgotten that name, Joshua Albert. But yeah, poor Jean. Yeah.
And then we're just like, wait, she's not there. And then we realized in the faraway shot, she's there. She like basically waves and runs away.
Yeah.
So that was great.
Yeah, we try to get everybody in there. You know, like we try to do it right. You know, we're like. We're like noble raisin farmers, just tilling Star Trek from the soil. Like, you know, American made, we have pride in our work and we're trying to honor things from the 90s that we loved.
Let me ask you about the raisin farming. Speaking of Boimler, that was fun to see the Boimler Rutherford kind of bromance roomy situation going on in season four. I don't know if there's like a ton like a, other than that, like that Boimler was doing in the season, I think he might have had like a little less screen time than maybe some of like the earlier years. So I'm wondering, like, are you saving ideas? You said you're cooking up stuff for season five, and I know that there's a lot of stuff you can't tell us about. But is there going to be more of a Boimler focus in a season five arc than we had in season four? Maybe.
Yeah, there's a really, you know, it's funny because like I want Boimler every episode. I want everybody every episode, and it's, you know. I think that's some of the end of the season because it became sort of a bigger Mariner story. Like there isn't as much Boimler at the end, but in season five, without giving it away, there's a bit more Boimler in season five than we followed in season four.
Okay. There's possibly multiple Boimlers. I know there's another one going around.
Well, there's been multiple Boimlers for years now. Right. I know we do got to check in on William Boimler at some point. What's he up to? Working with his secret Starfleet department.
Of course, I'm sure people thought that he was going to be part of this finale, too. So it's just like that was one of the things that people threw out. And the whale probe, that was another one.
We had a lot of people guessing a lot of stuff. And I couldn't believe nobody even stumbled into Locarno, ever.
Yeah. What I like about that is that we didn't think about it. I was genuinely surprised. And I think that's hard to do, like, when we're at this level of fandom sometimes. It's just like, okay, we figure it out or whatever. But that's still fun. But when you don't know, it's just like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, the Locarno stuff is made to be watched the second time. Like, it's all there, but you're not writing a season of TV in order to, it's not like an Encyclopedia Brown where it's like a riddle. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we didn't want people to know what was coming. We wanted people to be surprised.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so if it had just been Badgie or somebody that we've already told everybody multiple times is, you know, is an antagonist to these characters, then yeah. it just would have been a linear sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, it was a nice surprise with Locarno as the reveal. And I guess what was the, he seems like such like a great fit for Lower Decks as like a big bad type character. What was the genesis, no pun intended, for kind of like that idea of using him?
Well, I had known that I wanted Mariner to have been affected by the Dominion War, and I knew that I wanted to somehow tie the original Lower Decks episode to Lower Decks. And there were a lot of different ways to do it. And I was always kind of just being careful because I don't like to directly tie canon stuff that came before us, you know, unless it's like Exocomps or, you know, or like little, you know, going back to planets, Landru. Like,
you brought back the Vendorians.
Well, the original animated series I love bringing back, because when I started Lower Decks, a lot of people didn't even bring up the original animated series when they talked about Star Trek as
they didn't even know it existed. A lot of people,
they weren't allowed to for a while. Like Ron Moore said, they didn't want them putting animated series stuff into Deep Space Nine, and they were kind of secretly doing it anyways. But
I know, and I love the animated series. So that was always my goal, was Lower Decks can't be like that. Like, our goal is to just not be erased from being one of the things that you talk about when you talk about the franchise, which I think we've accomplished at this point. And then at the same time, if we're effective in that, bring the original animated series stuff into it, which then lends our necessity to them as well, which is what I was hoping we would do. Because if on Lower Decks, we love all Star Trek. There's no Star Trek that we're not down for, you know? And fans can argue what's the best, what's the worst, what counts, what doesn't count. But like, if you've got Star Trek in the name, if you're, you know, if you're produced by this franchise, then that's a treasure to us, you know, and that's what Lower Decks, that's what the characters in Lower Decks think, because that's what I think, you know?
And I love that you bring in stuff from the books occasionally, and just things that are not, you know, necessarily on screen all the time. Or Zahn. That's still my favorite, like, random mention. Like, it's the character that never existed.
I love that joke. And yeah, it's, you know, I'm not as deep in like the comics and the books and stuff, but when I know I need something and there's a design or a reference that existed in, what do they call it? Like beta canon, something like that.
Beta canon, like, yeah.
If there's something that just works and it doesn't change like the main canon, and we can fully canonize it, that's the best. Cause it's like, you know, we've all seen that happen. Like there's a reason that like people are so pumped for Thrawn. You know what I mean? It's because like we read those books in the '90s when there was no Star Wars anymore. And it's cool that thing that was important to us became a part of, you know, the main canon. Yeah. And so like, having like ideas that are in books and comics aren't worth less than ideas that are made on screen. So I like finding that stuff and kind of like saying, yeah, anything's possible. As long as it fits into canon, like a great idea in Star Trek is a great idea.
I was so happy when you finally made the Luna class design for the Titan canon way back in season, because that wasn't a
that
canon
was cool, right?
Design
yeah.
until yeah, until
well, it's a
all
great
the world's
design
a stage.
Too. I mean, like,
I love it.
Easy choice to make, because beautiful design. Loved the backstory for it. Like, what a scrappy Lower Decks, like a contest winning design, you know, like that's just cool. And so plus just seeing it swoop in and having Riker have his own ship and having it on screen, like it just felt like a cool extension of what I loved from TNG.
And speaking of beta canon really quickly, I worked on Star Trek Adventures, and we retrofitted the Spock 2's death. We actually worked it in. So now we how it happened. Yeah, exactly. So
everybody got mad at me for Spock 2's death. I'm like, guys, what? People die.
I was at the season 2 premiere, and you're just like, he's very old.
Yeah, come on. Like, I didn't invent that Spock had bones.
Right. <come on. laughs>
Mike, I don't know if you heard about this, but at the I know you were there at the Mission Chicago convention in 2022, I think last year. But Walter,
last year?
Yeah, that was
like so long ago.
It was April
this year. I wish we had.
Yeah, it was April of last year, but Walter Koenig was there, and I asked him during his panel if he knew about Spock 2 made a return in Lower Decks, and he didn't know that, but he thought that was amazing. He was surprised. He was like, really? Like, all 40 feet of that big dude? Awesome. I was like, yeah, I mean, like, he was dead hanging up on display, but he was like, that's effing amazing.
That's like, awesome.
He was really into it.
The Legacy cast, I've never seen a fan, like, they're fans too. They love it. That's been a part of their lives for so long. And like, they know their stuff, you know, it's really interesting. I love that. Like when I got to work with Takei, like he made me laugh like 15 times in that record. Like he's so freaking funny. And it just really speaks to like why we love these characters that they performed. Like they really imbued them with personality.
And speaking of Bones, did you think that Moopsie was going to be as insanely popular as it was?
No, because I mean, it's you never predict that stuff. Like it's because that happened to me a couple times on Rick and Morty too, where I'd be like, "Oh yeah, I thought that was funny, but now the whole world thinks that's funny. That's crazy." Moopsie was like a funny combination of like, you know, we knew the story we had to tell with Mariner, so we needed something in there that would cause the audience and Ransom to think Mariner had released it. I really wanted it to be a cute creature that also drank bones, because I loved the movie Deep Rising when I was a teenager.
Oh, wow.
The creature in that drinks your bones.
Yeah.
I think there's even a line where it's like, somebody's like, you don't understand. It drinks you, you know, or something that was in the trailer. And I always thought that was so funny.
That was one of those, like, all underwater shows. There was The Abyss, Deep Rising.
Well, yeah, this was very, like, oh, it was like this and Anaconda. You know what I mean? Like, things that he knew, the movie, and creature features. So, and then it was kind of like, oh, let's have a cute little character that you would believe, the audience would believe that Mariner might release because she didn't realize how dangerous it was, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that was the instinct on that. And then the character designer is like, we just kept like putting less and less detail in it, because like the less detail, the cuter it would look. And then when we did the temp audio for it, our editor's kid did the voice of it, and it was just so funny that we were like, we got to keep that kid as the voice because it was making us funny. And then the board artist like added the physicality of it, that it like walks like a little like moves around like a little like seal pup kind of. So, you know, the funny thing about Moopsie is like, it's not the reason I just blah, blah, blah about all that stuff is what I love about why Moopsie works is it was created as a story point. Right. And then the writers put together like a name and stuff, but then the artist came up with the look and the editor came up with the sound and then like, you know, the way it moved came together. So like, it wasn't this calculated, like people are going to like this. It was purely storytelling and design and all of these things that come together that result
collaborative
in works. Yeah. And it's like, that feels like an honest, like, you know, that feels like it doesn't feel like a corporate sort of like, it feels like an organic way of finding something that speaks to people. So when people love the Moopsie, I'm like, that's great. You know, it just means that we're doing it right. You know?
Yep.
Yeah. That's crazy that it did get so big so fast. Like I saw multiple, it wasn't just like a few people were doing this. A lot of people were like dressing their kids up as
Moopsies
for Halloween.
I also saw people dressed as twin twains for Halloween, which made me laugh out loud. Oh, wow. A Rutherford twain and a Boimler twain, which that was great.
Where did that idea come from? Like, is that rooted in something in real life? Like, just dressing up as Mark Twain and talking like that to each other to get along. Like,
have you never done that?
I've never. No, that's never occurred to me as an option.
Unsolvable arguments.
I guess I need to start dressing up as famous literary characters.
Listen, you get two people dressed up as Samuel Clemens, there's no arguing. There's only agreeing. So, highly recommend it. Yeah, I'm surprised.
What's funny is that they know in their... We don't know what Mark Twain actually sounded like because we have no recordings. But in their universe, they do know what Mark Twain sounds like.
Yeah, he visited the universe.
Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah. Listen. But. Mark Twain and Samuel Clemens is in us all. You know what I mean? You just have to let it out. And if you're ever really coming up against something, just pull out those mustaches and a mint julep and just twain it up. All right. It's part of Roddenberry's original Twain-esque vision of Starfleet officers. You know, there's no interpersonal conflict when you're on a riverboat.
Hashtag twain it up. Speaking of those old legacy actors, we need to get George Takei and William Shatner to twin twain.
I think that would help him. I think that would help him. Although, I almost feel like the way they talk about each other, we would be losing something if they started getting along at this point. Kind of a beautiful relationship.
The rivalry is a national treasure, is what you're saying.
Yeah, we gotta keep that. It's a resource. We need to tap into it. Power the
That's better than antimatter. Yeah, that's how we're gonna get warp drive.
In a bottle. Yeah.
That's great.
Mike, let me ask you about some of the other Star Trek shows other than Lower Decks, if I can deviate for a second. We've had some really cool, you know, nods to the other current shows on your show. We have the Rito shirt instead of like the Disco shirt. Yeah, they're name dropping Admiral Picard, the Strange New Worlds crossover this year, of course.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Any chance we might see like some reference to Star Trek Prodigy? You know, that show's kind of it had a bit of a journey this year, but
yeah. Well, Prodigy is tough because I love those guys, but they're in a different quadrant and they're a little after us. So that stuff hasn't happened. Our characters wouldn't know about the Protostar. Like, you know, the same thing happens with Disco where like our characters aren't supposed to know about Disco. So like every once in a while I put a species in or a nod, like the shirt. Cause like the shirt on Disco seemed like it could be fleet wide at one point. You know what I mean? Like that didn't seem like something they weren't allowed to know about, but I really try not to break the bubble of what is like, that's why we haven't had Enterprise characters, you know, on Lower Decks. Like T'Pol would have been the one that could have maybe sort of survived that long, you know, like it's,
she would have been like a McCoy in the first episode of TNG.
Yes.
Yeah. Even then that's a bit of a stretch.
Bit of a stretch. And then other times I try not to break that stuff. And I'm also trying to be careful to not do stuff that the other shows are currently doing. So like, Prodigy is still defining itself, and I don't want, you know, to do anything that steps on what they're doing in a way. Like, it's easier to talk about Deep Space Nine, which is what it is. It's fully complete. It's there. You know what I mean? So I kind of dip a toe in the other stuff, but, like, it's all out of caution. You know, Picard takes place 4 years after us. The Section 31 stuff is kind of, like, off of our radar. Like, there's, you know, I get to read and see everything that they're making, but it really is just out of an abundance of caution. And then I've got a split in a minute, guys. So are there any last minute lightning rounds you want for me?
I can do one final question unless Aaron has something.
Nope, you're good. Go ahead.
Mike, just let me ask you, like, have you met Todd Stashwick, who was like a big delight on Star Trek Picard this year? A fellow, as he's a self-proclaimed dipshit from Chicago. I think he's a super funny dude. Any chance we might have like a younger Liam Shaw or maybe like Todd Stashwick as a different character or something in Lower Decks? I don't know if you've met him, but y'all should talk. He's a really funny guy.
He's a really funny guy. And his son is an artist and is in the animation world. So I've talked to him a little bit about that. I haven't been able to hang out with him, I don't think. I know Tawny knows him from her days as a Chicago comedy person too.
Yeah. They were funny on the cruise together.
That's what I heard. Yeah. I know Tawny has a lot of affection for him. I missed Tawny and Todd because I was at Second City in like 2004. And I think Tawny started 2006. Like we missed each other by a couple years, but yeah, I mean, listen, right now we don't have young Shaw, but like, I do think the timeline works out pretty well. So maybe someday.
Awesome.
Very cool. Well, Mike, thank you so much for taking time to chat
with
us.
Thank you.
Really appreciate
it. Of course. Happy to do so. Aaron, always good to talk to you.
Good talking to you.
Nice to meet you, Fathery.
That was so cool to hear Mike McMahon say Fathery. That just made my day. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
Right.
Thanks for having me.
Adios. Bye. And we are back. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thank you, Mike McMahon, for coming and talking Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4 with us. I thought that was interesting to hear him talk about kind of one of the big themes in the show was characters unburdening themselves. And, you know, something Aaron, you talked about how some of the senior officers and particularly Captain Freeman have really, you know, stepped it up this season. And Mike talking about, because, you know, she unburdened that junk stuff that wasn't the stuff that she used to think was important, but it wasn't actually important. And when she learned to let go of it, you know, she became like a better, happier person. So I'm looking forward to seeing like the Mariner who's now kind of unburdened from her, you know, whole Encinito JAXA baggage. So I'm looking forward to what that spells for her.
It's interesting to go back and watch earlier episodes with that in your head, that's what she's frustrated about. And it's like, oh, okay, that kind of makes more sense now.
Yeah, for sure. And the Maglimo stuff, we got to ask him about, like, why does Maglimo always seem to suck at his job? And I liked hearing that. Oh, he's actually good, but the good therapy is not funny, so we don't show you that part.
Yeah. Oh, good therapy can be funny.
I'm sure it can be, just harder to... That is funny, seeing, like, the people who watch the video of it, the cardboard wharf pointing a phaser at him the entire interview. Like, he's like we were holding him prisoner or something, forcing him to do this.
Do the interview. It will be honorable.
the Moopsie thing, how that was a team effort, and the animator's cool. Kid was just kind of like a temp voice on there. And they're like, this is so funny, we have to keep it.
That totally reminds me of the young Spock from TAS, where they did the, you know, interview, the audition, basically. And then they liked it so much, they just used it.
Yeah, they auditioned the kid, and they're like, well, shit, we can just cut him a check. This is good enough.
Yeah. They're like, when do we come back in? Like, oh, no, you don't need to come back in.
I don't know. Brandy, what do you think? Any thoughts?
I really enjoyed that. I loved hearing the evolution of Moopsie. That was fun. And I appreciate his insight onto what he likes to include and what he doesn't want to step on. And that's really so smart. It really is. And I just have a lot of respect for the guy. And I just, I'm so glad you guys got to talk to him for that long. It was just really cool to hear you guys.
We would have all talked longer if he had actual time. But he's like, now that the strike was over for him, it was just like, meeting.
Yeah, it was hard to kind of coordinate that. But hopefully we get him back at some point in the future. Yeah. I know Aaron and I are both cooking up content. I know that Aaron is he's working on some Drawn to Trek ideas. And I'm about to bring Dave out of banishment. I know I've gotten reports from
cryosleep.
Yeah, people in the Text Trek audience are missing Dave, so we are going to bring him back aboard the Starship Texas in December. I can now announce that both Text Trek and I believe Drawn to Trek as well will be on hiatus for at least the next 2 weeks for the rest of November. Taking it off for Thanksgiving. So, but yeah. Make sure that you're following both shows, and we'll keep you updated. But Text Trek number 268 is currently scheduled for December 1st, and Dave and I will take a look back at all of Star Trek in 2023. Now that we've gotten everything we're gonna get, at least as far as the shows, there might be some comic stuff. I don't think there's any books coming out in the next 2 months, but I could be wrong.
I don't think so.
Whatever is coming out, though, I guess Dave and I will possibly talk about it. But the bigger thing, even bigger than the cooler than the 2023 in review, but on December 15th, this is a big announcement here, will be the premiere of the first and probably last. There should never be another one. But the Text Trek Christmas special, which I am working on, it's Dave and I just got this figured out. It's going to be a lot of work, but I got a month and I think I can pull it off. But I think it's something it's going to be very different from anything we've done before. But I think people will like it. And I'm going to ask Brandy and Aaron both if they can, if they can contribute, because I'm going to have some collaborations. So but I think y'all will like it. So more on that to come in the future. That's all I got. But we'll have a lot of new content next year, in the year to come. Now that the strikes are over, people are going to be making new Star Trek, so all kinds of cool stuff. So, but thanks, people who checked us out tonight, whether you were watching or listening, we appreciate it. And thank you to the Text Trek Patreon supporters who make the weekly live show possible: Starfleet Sohel, Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Daw, Geek Filter, Earl Grey Trekkie, Quarksbar, Benjunium, Stephanie Durantes, Matthew Averett, Braxton, Chuck A, and our anonymous supporters. Thank each and every one of you so much. Come back December 1st for the Return of Dave and Star Trek in 2023 retrospective. And again, the Text Trek Christmas special, or Trekmas special, maybe I'll call it from now on December 15th. But until then, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Live long and proper, too.
Listen to the Text Trek podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or at text-trek.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/text-trek. And follow Fathery on Twitter at TXTrek. Please support us by liking our videos and subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Thank you, and take care.